my reading of the crisis of the United States, following along some of the fundamentals that Bob talked about, and then the particular problems as they spread and grew in that John talked about, that what I really saw from the system was that it first sort of became visible in the summer of 2007, and then gradually the crisis appeared to be deepening, growing, and then it started gaining momentum, and then we started seeing some of the bankruptcies. I think there's something like 15 U.S. Banks have gone bankrupt in this year so far. And my reading of it, very impressionistic, is that by the end of September, so just a few weeks ago, the system had basically reached what I would call a critical point, that the self-reinforcing downward spiral had suddenly taken on such momentum and such a sort of an inexorable force that we literally were, I thought, right on the verge of a complete and total financial meltdown. And I think that cold realization just prompted a whole range of governments and institutions to basically just throw everything that they could at the system. They weren't sure what was going to work, but if there's a kitchen sink, throw it in as well. And I think that it at least stopped the precipitous collapse. That's not to say that we've hit bottom. I don't think we have. But at least it's perhaps bought a little more time for some of the perhaps more constructive political sorts of organizations to try to get a hold of things and steer it in a direction that we might wish. In any event, that's where we were just a couple of weeks ago. And so if we were right on the brink a couple of weeks ago, we're sort of stepped back a couple of paces anyways. But that especially was pronounced, and so it was argued, in the United States. I want to talk a bit about the perspective in Canada, and especially sort of raise the question that, well, this is, of course, Canada. We take a somewhat bemused attitude about developments, for better or for ill, with our southern neighbors. Our politicians often remind us, especially when it's in their interest to do so, that we are not the United States. And, of course, we just heard over the Canadian election campaign, repeated assertions from the government in power that Canada's economic fundamentals are sound. So I want to sort of explore that a little bit, and I will keep an eye on the time here. How sound are those fundamentals, really? Conventional sorts of things that economists often look at and that politicians quickly pointed to when trying to articulate that case would be things like, well, compare Canada and the United States, say, on the trade balance or the current account balance. The United States, as I'm sure everybody's aware, has been running huge trade deficits, chronic deficits for a number of years now. Canada, just the opposite situation. We've been running trade surpluses. And in fact, Statistics Canada said just in trades and goods in October or August of 2008, a tidy little $5.8 billion surplus. The government budget balance, at least from the point of view of the criterion of the current government in power, this is maybe their proudest accomplishment. Canada, there was a chart in the Globe and Mail on the weekend. Canada, it was pointed out, is the only G7 country that has a budget balance that is positive, that's running a surplus. All the others are running deficits. Canada's surplus amounts to slightly less than 1% of GDP, so that's the federal and provincial governments taken together. Thanks, Alberta and Saskatchewan. But the United States, the worst of the G7 countries, has been running a public deficit of minus 4% GDP. So you would think, well, okay, all these economic fundamentals are one thing, but just general mainstream economic accounting, Canada has a trade surplus, the U.S. has a big trade deficit. Canada has a budget surplus, U.S. big budget deficit. So no wonder the U.S. is having a big crisis, and no wonder Canada is relatively, provisionally, ostensibly unscathed. Well, there's a couple of other economic variables that I, in particular, pay attention to. One, not exclusive to me, but it would be just basic growth. What about economic growth? Well, as had been pointed out frequently, Canada's growth rates for the national economy, obviously very uneven regionally, but for the national economy, pretty good. 2005, 2006, 2007, although the last quarter of 2007 had actually, for Canada, actually dropped to less than 1% on an annualized basis. In the United States, the last quarter of 2007 was actually negative. So even though we went down, the U.S. were worse. It's interesting, though, that this crisis that's rocking the U.S. economy has nonetheless seen growth in the first quarter of 2008 in the United States pick up 0.9%. Okay, that's not a lot, but it's positive. And in the second quarter, 2.8%, almost 3% growth. Not bad these days. Canada, in those two quarters, first quarter of 2008, we had negative growth, 0.8% GDP growth. And second quarter, positive, but a rather meager 0.3%. The recent numbers that I've seen for July show a bit of an increase again in Canada, but obviously the third quarter statistics aren't in. But in any event, the growth numbers for Canada are certainly for 2008 absolutely nothing to write home about, and precipitously below what we've been used to the last couple of years. You can say, okay, well, it's a business cycle, that's a fluctuation. One quarter does not make a trend, etc. That's possible. Another important variable, though, as mentioned in earlier presentations, is the profit rate. So I did some work on profit rates in Canada, and I found this chart actually to be very interesting. This takes it right up, these are annualized profit rates, this takes it right up for the business sector up to the end of 2007. And the Canadian numbers are, for me, very striking. There was that same sort of crisis in the 80s and part of a longer trend of maybe a secular decline in the profit rate. But all the sort of restructuring, the same sorts of things that happened in the United States, proved to be very successful in Canada. And basically, the story of the Canadian economy since that time, if you measure in terms of profitability and capitalism, and profitability is what capitalism, of course, is supposed to be all about. That's the engine, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we've probably never done so well. Certainly never done so well for many, many decades. Another chart just shows this is the profit share. So how much of Canadian GDP is actually going to profits? Well, the numbers show a similar trend. Maybe not quite as unprecedented because obviously there was a high level in the mid-70s. But again, the story of the last 15 years or so would seem to suggest, well, maybe at least from the capitalist point of view, these economic fundamentals really are sound. And I think this is one of actually the very interesting things about this particular crisis, is that unlike other crises such as Henry pointed out in a historical perspective, where there is this downward trend, secular decline in the rate of profit, the Canadian story, here you've got profits in recent times, unprecedented levels, and there may be a crisis breaking out. Now, well, Canada may be fundamentally sound. Maybe profits aren't a good indicator of what's going on. Well, I'd like to pursue that just a little bit farther. Are these fundamentals sound? And what's the real story sort of underlying this profitability? Well, there's a number of features that I think have contributed to this profitability. Part of it, certainly the last 10 years, especially the last 5 years, has been the profitability of the resource sector. Canada's a resource economy, and certainly that's added to national profit rates. Also, the financial sector in Canada, as well as elsewhere, has certainly been earning larger shares of national profits. The working class has suffered the same sort of attacks and had to make the same sort of concessions as their brothers and sisters in the United States. And productivity continued to increase, not as great as in the United States, but as a result, nonetheless, there's certainly been increases in the rate of exploitation in Canada. And also, I think the same sort of transformation with regards to consumers and consumer spending, sustained in part by falling unemployment rates, rising employment levels, extension of consumer credit, all of that, of course, then helped finance consumer spending, which also, I think, strengthened profitability. But I think there's a couple of problems here. I mean, part of it is this polarization of wealth and the pressure that working class, and indeed the bulk of the population, are under to sort of maintain living standards, and through that to sort of sustain this profitability. They, for the gravy to keep flowing, someone has to, of course, keep making the gravy. And how long that can be sustained is questionable. If we look at sort of some of the underlying trends, this is household credit in Canada. There's two lines here. One is total household credit. The other is household mortgages. What I'm measuring here is just annual growth rates of that, basically since 1991. And you can just see that the last since 2001, that's just sort of taken off. So the household sector in Canada, just like in the United States, becoming increasingly indebted. And just as a further indication, if you look at household debt as a percentage of personal disposable income. So this is after after tax disposable income, after you get rid of all those nice tax cuts. That number is still rising from about 80% in 1990 to close to 140% of disposable income by midpoint of 2008. So I would sort of point to these things and say, well, this is contributing to the profitability, but it's also contributing to the strains, the tensions, and I would argue some of the fragility within the Canadian system itself. So in that sense, Canada is not integrated in and of its own terms, or is not isolated in and of its own terms from the possibility of deep economic problems. The other significant point, though, is this question of economic integration. Of course, Canada certainly is not an island into itself, and even though we are not the United States, we sure are pretty closely linked with the United States in a number of fundamental ways. Here's just very briefly a couple of them. Trade. Everybody knows about Canada-US trade, our largest trading partner. I think the quotation was something like 35% of Canadian GDP is based upon trade with the United States. So obviously that's big. And weakening U.S. Demand for Canadian goods is going to have an effect here. Finance. Financial markets are even more highly integrated. John mentioned, of course, this integration of financial markets on a global scale. Certainly on a North American scale, financial markets are highly integrated. As John pointed out, all sorts of Canadian institutions have varying degrees of exposure to U.S. markets. And as those U.S. markets and asset prices go down, Canadian financial institutions feel the pinch. Many Canadian companies are branch plants, are foreign affiliates of U.S. companies. The credit crisis in the United States, I saw an article in the newspaper just a week ago, one consequence of that is that parent companies are tapping their Canadian affiliates on the shoulder saying, hand over the cash, we need it. and it's creating this sort of nice legal problem because some Canadian boards of directors are supposed to sort of maintain the viability of their branch plant, but the head office wants the money, so they're in this moral quandary. But in any event, that's economic integration, and that's certainly going to affect Canada. Also, I think very important is psychology, that the 49th parallel of the Canada-US boundary, such as it is, may affect, limit people going back and forth, but it certainly doesn't limit ideas going back and forth, and it certainly doesn't prevent the flow of psychological angst, animal spirits, for better and for worse, and right now it's for worse. So as U.S. financial markets create their problems and you have a reduction in confidence, that spills over very easily into the Canadian case, and that affects economic behavior, perceptions of risk, and all sorts of things. And finally, I'd be remiss to point out that I think that the training of economists, as well as perhaps some of our counterparts in the business schools and finance schools, are heavily dominated by ideas that are developed and propagated in the United States. A distinctive Canadian economics is, I think, something that's a very rare bird indeed. So there's all this sort of integration. It's perhaps not surprising that we are not immune to feeling the effects of these rumbles in the United States. Finally, just to sort of re-emphasize that point, not only is Canada facing a recession similar to that of the United States, although there's certain circumstances that give it a particular Canadian twist, but just maybe two other points with respect to that. On the one hand, Canadian stock markets, TSX, for example, even though Canada is not the United States and we don't have the subprime bubble, the trajectory of the TSX, certainly since the beginning of January, has more or less followed that of its U.S. counterpart, such as the Dow. And indeed, what happened in that first week or two of October, and indeed what's sort of been happening the last couple of days, is exactly basically the same thing. So the markets are saying there's not that much difference. Finally, the other thing is that just in terms of that real crisis in the early October, that rush to liquidity, just very briefly, this is just an up-to-date sort of spread of the weekly commercial paper rate versus 90-day treasury bill. So basically, you want to hold corporate bonds or government bonds. And ideally, you want to hold corporate bonds because, ideally, corporate bonds have a higher rate of return, but that's offset by government bonds that are supposed to be less risky. If the spread widens, it means that corporate bonds have to offer much higher rates of return because nobody wants them. And that's exactly what happened. So there's a sort of a panic rushing away from corporate paper, and that's sort of reflecting the freezing up of the corporate credit markets. That's the story in the Canadian financial markets, exactly what was happening in the United States. And then finally, just the last thing, here's the Government of Canada 90-day Treasury bills. What happened the last day, the weekly rates for these government securities, October the 8th, that plummeted to 0.53%, which basically meant that owners of capital and wealth in Canada were prepared to dump their wealth into the private or into public bonds at virtually no rate of return because they just didn't trust anything else. And that was just sort of that panic and seizing up of credit markets. Since that time, by the way, this rate has sort of gone back up and it's about around 1.8% right now. But the point I'm making is that the markets reacted exactly in the same way in Canada as they did in the United States. So I think that there's a great deal of similarity, and therefore I think that there's a great deal that both we and our counterparts south of the border need to worry about in the